Good morning. This morning's scripture reading is from the book of Matthew, chapter 16, verses 13 to 20. Peter declares that Jesus is the Messiah. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah.
For those of you who may not have been here for a couple of weeks, we have been sort of launching into a series which might be described as Jesus geography. One of my favorite blog posts that I read regularly is called Journey with Jesus, and so this kind of is taking that to a more practical place. Where actually on the planet did Jesus go, and does it make any difference to consider that? As you heard read by Martina, Caesarea Philippi is where the famous questions get popped. Jesus asking, "Who do you say that I am? What about you?" Caesarea Philippi is the location on the planet where these questions get popped, which was pretty far away from his home base. On the map, you'll see that it is up to the north in the light green. It is about 25 miles north of Galilee. It's about a 100-mile walk from Jerusalem. It's a fair piece to walk, is how I've heard old timers up north say it. It's another long walk for Jesus and the 12. And so what are they doing way up there in this region of Caesarea Philippi? On this map, actually, that's up there now, was one that we looked at a little while back.
Is this... old pastor, new technology, that's not going well. On this map here, we looked at this earlier about a month ago. And if you remember, there are three colors, and Jesus' dad and mom, Mary and Joseph, landed Jesus in Nazareth, which is the middle green up there, because it was too dangerous for him to be in the south, where Archelaus was. It was safer to raise his son there. Also remember what we said that Sunday was that Herod may have been called Herod the Great, but he was not the real head honcho in the world. That head honchoship belonged to the Roman emperor, Mr. Caesar, and so that made Herod a kind of regional manager, if you will. And so then when regional manager King Herod the Great died, he split his territory up in three ways between his three sons. Again, Archelaus in the dark green, Antipas in the middle green, and Philip in the light green. But today we have Jesus traveling in Caesarea Philippi. And I don't know how much we want to make of today's location. Maybe we just point out that Caesarea Philippi has two names embedded in it. Beware. Wrong. Wrong.
Wrong. Can you do that from up there? Oh, there it is. There. So I don't know how much to make of the name of today's location, but we might just want to point out that the word Caesar and Philip are embedded in it. Caesarea Philippi. Both Caesar and Philip are in the name of this place where Jesus goes. Now, maybe it's just an honorary name, like Washington being the place where we named after George, or Chambersburg being the name that we named after Colonel Chambers, or Baltimore after Lord Baltimore, that sort of thing. Honorary, maybe. Caesarea Philippi, maybe it's an aptly named honorific. But for whatever reason, Jesus goes up there, and it is the place, the location, where the question popping happens. What are people saying about me? What about you? What do you think? Who do you say that I am? If we've heard this scripture lesson before, we know that Peter comes off as a sort of hero. Like the kid in the middle of the classroom waving her full arm off because the answer is obvious to the question that the teacher has just asked. I got it. Peter is there with the correct answer. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And certainly we will stand in line with pastors and Sunday school teachers everywhere, ready to give Peter the thumbs up. Give him the sticker, send him to the head of the class. Good answer, Pete. Right answer, you rock. Good job. But have we moved too fast? I would like to suggest two things that we will have to account for. This Peter, with his Johnny-on-the-spot right answer, will go on to deny Jesus later. So let's be careful of bringing a slam dunk to this text. The second thing that I would like to say is that discipleship training with Jesus was a 3-year enterprise. Up there in Caesarea Philippi, they're in the middle stages of that 3-year stint. One of the phrases that we hear nowadays a lot is learning curve, which means the more someone does something, the better they get at it. Kind of like putting the laptop in front of my 80-year-old mom. She wanted to do emails like everyone else, but it took plenty of trial and error for her to learn how to use the thing. It took a while before she sent her first one. It was a learning curve. You get better at doing something the more you do it. But learning curve can also mean a body of knowledge learned over time. And maybe that's why Jesus' discipleship program took 3 years. 3 years, because it takes time to learn. I know that I've brought up this name before, Dr. Anil Solanki, who was one of my teachers, and he was Indian, and so his way of education was more Eastern than Western, and he is a very smart and patient man, smart enough to translate the entire Bible into Gujarati, the language of his people, so he's an incredibly gifted man, but he's also patient enough to be a teacher. Day after an exam, he would put all our test papers back in our hands and insist on going back over all of the things that we got wrong. He'd say, "I don't care about the grade at the top of the paper. That's for the dean to worry about. I want you to know. I want you to learn," is what he'd say. And he meant it. And it made me think of Jesus' 3-year program. I want you to know. I want you to learn, however long it takes. Once before an exam on the book of Deuteronomy, we 8 students were shuffling our desks around in preparation, and we were joking about where to place our desks so that if we wanted to cheat, we would be sitting next to the right person to cheat from. And Anil knew full well that we were joking. He did. But he said in his calm, teacherly voice, "You know, if you felt the need to cheat, I would not teach you." Which was less about the grades and more about the trusted bond between master and pupil. And it makes me think of Jesus and his 3-year program and their bond. And what was Judas thinking when Peter said this? This midterm question, who do you say that I am? I ran into Anil several years back during a Pastor's Week conference, and I told him how much he had meant to me as a teacher, and I told him I often referenced our Deuteronomy class in teaching and preaching, but I was not sure that Deuteronomy was always well understood. And Anil's response was so quick and so him. He said, tell them again and again. And it makes you think of Jesus' answers up there in Philippi. When Jesus asked, who are people saying that I am? Their answers varied across the board. Some say John the Baptist and Elijah and the long list of other prophets. And then Pete does give his good answer that we have no record of what the others were thinking. What might Judas have said here? Did he agree with Peter or not? Learning curves, Jesus' 3-year program, the grace of space to learn. And isn't that what most of us need too? Spaces of grace to learn and to keep deepening our faith. Caesarea Philippi is a place. It took days and days of walking to get up there. You kind of had to commit to want to get there. And apparently, for whatever reason, Jesus took the journey north and took his class with him. Now, there are some other reasons why Caesarea Philippi is famous, why it was granted an honorific name. A couple centuries back, after the death of Alexander the Great, it was a site of a major battle where Antiochus the Great defeated the Egyptians, and so it has its place in history. And before it was granted the name Caesarea Philippi, it was called Panaeus, after a Greek god, Pan, which, by the way, is where we get our word panic. At this place, there is also a cave. Come on. Oh, you should never give a pastor. There it is. I love that. This place has a cave. And there is a very large spring that flows out of it, a very fertile site with grasses and trees. And because it was quite an unusual place, it also became a worship site. Notice the niches carved into the rock on, we can see one there. I think there's another picture coming up that should show it even better. Yeah, there it is. Notice the niches that are carved there. These are worship shrines. Beginning in and around the 3rd century BC, sacrifices were cast into the cave to the god Pan. There's also a niche carved out there for Echo and the mountain nymph. And there's another niche in there for Pan's father, Hermes. So yeah, this was a worship site. And is that why Jesus took the long walk up north out of the way with his disciples to Caesarea Philippi, to the worship site of Pan? And do the disciples still remember what Jesus said back in the grain fields, that something greater than the temple is here? What are people saying about me? What do you say? Who do you say that I am? I know an 80-year-old man who is about as devout a Christian as can be. He's not perfect, but you can easily see that his life has been profoundly shaped by Jesus, and it has affected his farm choices. It has affected his decision-making around the house. It has affected his faith even in the middle of intense grief. His loyalty and work for the church have been so evident in his life. And his children and grandchildren notice his exemplary character, and they will notice it from a distance, even comment on it frequently, but then oddly never really stop to ask why, what is the source of the power of his life. They choose to revere it, to comment on it, but at a safe distance. They'll see it, but not go there.
Today's scripture lesson comes from Matthew 16, chapter 16. That fact is not by itself all that noteworthy, but where we find Jesus is somewhere in the middle of his ministry on earth. In Matthew's earlier chapters, we have seen him teaching. He has healed a man of leprosy. He has been in a centurion servant of their paralysis. He has healed Peter's mother-in-law. He has healed two demon-possessed men and a paralytic and a dead girl and a bleeding woman. He has healed the blind and the mute. And in the midst of his work, he keeps on teaching in parables and instructions more direct than that. He has feeding 5,000. He walks on water. He mixes it up with some Pharisees, telling them how about they honor God with their lips, but their hearts are still far away. He heals the Canaanite woman's daughter of demon possession. He feeds 4,000 people, and some more scribes and some more Pharisees say, well, this is all very well and good stuff, but we need to see a sign. We need to see a sign from heaven. Jesus has been busy with his disciples in tow. There's a phrase that I have been living with for several months. I really can't let it go. It comes from a man named David Fitch, who is a seminary teacher. He says, I'd never say that your frame is wrong or mine is right. I'm just asking you to examine your frame, or at least be aware that you are living within a frame, which is a way of saying all of us carry around a framework of thinking that we have been developing since the day that we were born. And I think this phrase has a lot to do with why Jesus makes the trek up to Caesarea Philippi. For Jesus' band of 12 is an eclectic bunch. There are different guys, fishermen whose weekly catch went through the tax booths on their way to markets, a tax collector's job who has him riding the fence between faith and empire. A couple of zealots were in Jesus' band, those who held the highest hopes for messianic overthrow with their mindset of make Israel great again. These 12 men had come with their frameworks in place, and Jesus has been busy, very busy, has hiked to this pivotal place on the map, the place of Pan worship, the place where ancient battles have been fought, the place that bore the name of Philip the Tetrarch and Tiberius Caesar. He takes them to Caesarea Philippi and pops them the question. In the midst of all of what goes on around here, in the middle of the powers that be, in the middle of pagan worship and Roman intrusions and unfair tax burdens, who do you say that I am? Have you been paying attention? Have you observed how I have been operating? Where are you on your learning curves? Where are you at? Is Jesus' question, which is not so Sunday school simple as we would prefer it to be. Caesarea Philippi is a dot on our maps, lodged near the backs of our Bibles mostly, and we could easily skip over it altogether. We could. We could also let our imaginations run a little wild and form Caesarea Philippi into a rural retreat center, like Cove Valley, a place to get away, a retreat center away from home. After all, it does have verdant foliage in the midst of a desert. We could imagine it to be a getaway retreat for Jesus and his followers, but no. Caesarea Philippi is a storied place, a place where muscle and might has been worshipped, a shrine of ancient gods that still hung close to people's hearts and minds, and the place where Jesus pops the midterm exam, suggesting in all of this, when you account for all of what I have been doing previously and how I have been doing it, what does that tell you about me? As you have been watching what I have been doing, who do you say that I am? Today's scripture lesson is from Matthew 16, but follow the action. In the very next chapter comes Mount Hermon, a little further yet to the north, the place where Jesus becomes transfigured. And I wonder about the learning curves, the frameworks of his disciples as they keep following Jesus northward on the map. Caesarea Philippi may be a place, it may be a dot in the back of our Bibles, but Jesus' question from there still stands. Who do you say that I am? And it must move beyond Sunday school simplicity. For with Caesarea Philippi as a backdrop, Jesus is asking about the powers that govern us, the things that shape us. our own learning curves and our own frameworks, and do they line up with what I have been doing previously, is where Jesus is heading. These next few days will be celebratory days for a good many of us around here. The American way will once again be on center stage. The American dream will be on display in our baseball parks and in our town squares. And the means to protect it all will flood our Facebook threads and other social media outlets, which will once again form a great backdrop for Jesus' question. Have you been paying attention to what I have been doing? Who do you say that I am? Where does your worship take a knee?